This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. According to historian John Ashley Soames Grenville, the first use of the word summit as a global leader meetup was in Geneva, the Cold War summer of 55. For the heads of the U.S., Soviet Union, Britain, and France, the meeting was an effort to break the ice on peaceful coexistence. Summit has been applied to such gatherings of global chiefs ever since, including thrice this week for NATO, the G7, and for Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin's first in-person chat, which, like the summit of 55, was in Geneva in uneasy times. Biden went on the record in an ABC News interview.
You know Vladimir Putin, you think he's a killer?
Mm-hmm, I do.
So what price must he pay?
The price he's going to pay, well, you'll see shortly.
Sanctions have been levied and diplomats expelled.
The United States on Thursday announced sanctions punishing Moscow for alleged cyber hacking, election interference, and other malign acts.
A buildup of Russian forces along the border with Ukraine is reportedly setting off alarms for the U.S. and its allies.
Russia now kicking out 60 American diplomats from Moscow and shutting the U.S. consulate in St. Petersburg.
A ransomware attack that shut down the country's largest gasoline pipeline was most likely the work of Russians.
This summit was a classic icebreaker. That's all it was expected to be. Pundits were left with little but body language to pick over when the doors closed.
What do you make of the little things we've seen so far? The way they shook hands, the fact that they both showed up on time.
Even the way that Joe Biden crossed his legs, looking very comfortable, very casual. He's been coached on body language. Putin, of course, a master of it. You see him there sprawled out a little bit like he owns the place.
Biden is way more concentrated on Putin. We see him quite eager. His balance is well forward.
After the doors opened, each president held separate press conferences. When asked about Russia's human rights record, Putin showcased his signature moves, deflections, and whataboutisms.
Look at the American streets. People are getting killed there, including those who are leading the various political organizations. You can get a bullet in the back of your neck. A woman just ran away from the police and they shot her in the back.
But we admit it. We're working on it.
But take Afghanistan, shooting from a drone. At an unarmed crowd. Clearly, the civilian crowd. How would you call that? Who is the killer now?
Well,
the Guantanamo prison is still operating. It doesn't even start to resemble what is stipulated in the international law or in the U.S. legislation. And yet it exists.
Well, there are still 40 people there. But is Putin actually saying that American failures give him carte blanche? President Biden opened his presser by suggesting the meeting had been overhyped, that it was merely the start of a dialogue on vital issues. And he expressed cautious positivity, a tone one reporter seemed to, well, overhype.
Why are you so confident he'll change his behavior, Mr. President?
I'm not confident. What will change their behavior is the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world. I'm not confident of anything. I'm just stating the fact.
Alexei Kovalyov is the investigative editor at Medusa, an independent Russian news outlet. And he noticed that after the meeting, Putin did something unusual. He said something nice.
He said it was a very instructive meeting, that despite the impression that
some media giving about him. Joe Biden is a professional and he's very informed, and that even if he consults some cheat notes, as yesterday Russian state media were quick to point out, Putin said it's nothing unusual and we all do that. He was unusually friendly. From the looks of it, Putin is eager for at least some improvement in relations with the United States, because, well, we really can't go on like this for too long.
You saw some familiar tropes in Putin's presentation. Whatever Russia is doing is because the U.S. did it first.
I wonder if he realizes how insane it actually sounds, whether it's the Guantanamo or whether it's the George Floyd protests or police brutality in the United States. The essence of it is always the same. So you don't have the moral authority to criticize us, because look at yourself, things are as bad or probably even worse.
And then there's something that the U.S. population has become very familiar with, which is the, you know, uncontested lie.
Yes, that's one of his tricks up his sleeve, in the same league as turning up hours late. That's just his way of not trying to convince you of something, but of just showing you your place.
It's an exercise of power. What did you think of Biden's presentation?
Well, the optics of not allowing Russian press to the press conference wasn't good. And of course, the Russian press quickly latched onto this and criticized Biden for, so what about your famous freedom of speech thing, et cetera, et cetera.
Why do you think that Biden excluded the Russian press?
Maybe the logic was that, why invite the press that's all controlled by the government when you can just talk to the guy himself? If that indeed was this thinking, then it's getting uncomfortably close to what Putin himself thinks of the press. He clearly doesn't believe in the free press. And it's evident when he sits down for a one-on-one interview with a foreign journalist, which he would never do in Russia with an independent media. I mean, was Medusa, there is no chance in hell we'll ever get a sit-down interview with Putin. The Kremlin won't even acknowledge our existence. They scrubbed all mentions of Medusa from the Kremlin's transcript of the interview with NBC's Keir Simmons.
While we're on the subject, you were designated by Russia as a foreign agent. What does that mean for Medusa?
From now on, we have to, on pain and a very huge backbreaking fine, put a massive, ugly legal disclaimer on top of everything we publish. And that includes all ads and promotional materials. And of course, that scared away 90% of our advertisers, and it ruined our business model. We launched a crowdfunding campaign, which helped us stay afloat for a few months more. But now our sources are also afraid to talk to us for fear of being associated with a foreign agent. Our freelancers are reluctant to work with us. And that creates a whole new set of problems which haven't existed before. I mean, we are the first independent media outlet to be designated a foreign agent. So we are in uncharted waters. We don't know what's going to happen next. But, I mean, it's not really looking good. And that was the plan. That was the design, to slowly strangle independent media out of existence.
So how did the Russian press deal with Putin at his press conference?
Pretty much the same as they would at any regular press conference. You know, just throw him these softball questions. Pretty much the same that the Russian press criticized the Americans for.
What was notable to you about the performance of the American press in dealing with Putin?
So there was a lot of what I would call soundbite theatrics, where the act of asking the tough question is more important than getting the actual answer, because if you've been following Russia long enough, you know that what the answer would be. So it came from ABC's Rachel Scott, who asked Putin, the list of your political opponents who are dead in prison, don't jail this long, what are you so afraid of? But of course, Putin would deflect with a long diatribe about BLM protests in the United States or something. So I don't think it was very informative in terms of getting actual answers from Putin, because he's not there to do that.
But something stood out for you, not during the actual press conference, but remarks by NBC's Keir Simmons after his interview with Putin.
Keir said that after the interview, which lasted for 90 minutes, Putin stayed for almost an hour, and he leaned in, and he was really trying to persuade Keir that America is actually buying up all the Russian opposition and trying to unseat him through regime change efforts. And something that really shines through all his bluster, his actual fear.
So you think he means it?
He does. And I think all of Russia's recent domestic policies are a reflection of that.
He was trying to talk to Keir Simmons because he saw Keir Simmons as a representative of the U.S.?
Oh, yes, that's very evident from the answers he gave Mr. Simmons. And Simmons was always trying, but I'm just a journalist. I have no influence on the U.S. policy. But, you know, Putin wouldn't take any of that. I mean, he's quite convinced that the way the press works in the United States is the same. And not just the press, the civil society, everything. Because he's been president for 21 years now. That's the way it's always been with him. Literally, the first thing he did was bring all the big business and the media and the civil society to his heel. Because he saw free press and independent market as agents of chaos. And he's convinced that everyone sees them as such. And he thinks that the U.S. press is just as subservient to the president's office as the state media in Russia. And that's why he's talking to foreign journalists as ambassadors of their governments.
When he was asked about cyber attacks, he said that the U.S. has a huge cyber offensive program, which is true, and that Russia has hardly any program at all. How do you make progress on those issues if you don't admit you have those issues?
I think there's a difference between what Vladimir Putin says in the public and what his aides and ambassadors and diplomats back channel back to the Americans. So if the American side presented incontrovertible evidence of Russian hacking into American networks, and if the Russian side admitted it through back channels, they would never do it publicly. Yeah, but probably in maybe a few months or a year, the intensity of cyber attacks will quietly go down. And that's how we'll know that this summit was a success. They'll never want to be seen as caving into someone's pressure.
A lot of people have said this meeting shouldn't be receiving so much attention, that it's just legitimizing Putin, it's platforming a dictator. I'd push back on that. This is the U.S. president and the Russian president. I mean, they should meet, right? What do you think?
Well, of course they should. I mean, there's no way around that. No matter what we think about Putin, he's the president and he's going to be for any foreseeable future. So we got to work with what you have. After all these years of this craziness, I'm actually very cautiously relieved. What happened at this meeting and the summit and the Putin's remark after the summit, I'm kind of egotistically hoping that if the relations with the United States improve somehow, maybe it's going to be a relief for us here, for independent media and a civic society, because we are being punished for the state of relations between the United States and Russia, despite us not having any say in it.
Alexei, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It was very interesting and illuminating conversation, unlike President Putin's press conference.
Alexei Kovalyev is the investigative editor at Medusa. Coming up, presidential missteps on press freedom. Yesterday, 50 years ago, and 60 years ago, here, there, and everywhere. This is On the Media.